listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. I've had the great pleasure of reading a wonderful book, and the book is called The True Face of Kindness. And the subtitle is Stories from the COVID Crazy Years. And there's a picture of a toad with a crown upon his head. And that's part of the story. But I read this book and it so touched my heart because it's 30 stories told of 30, I'm not going to say average Kiwis, but everyday Kiwis who didn't buy into the narrative and what life was like for them. And I identified with every one of them because the humiliation, the indignation, the anger, the frustration, the loss of friends, the loss of family, the trying to understand it, all came flooding back to me. And I realized I'd parked a lot of it. And this book stands as testimony to people's everyday experience of the COVID years here in New Zealand. And we're very lucky to have the author, Christopher Goy, with us. And he was ably assisted by Adriana James, who's here as well, to talk about this amazing book. So good morning, Christopher, and good morning, Adriana.
Hello, Rodney.
I'm so pleased you've written this book.
Oh, I'm delighted, Rodney. It's it's been a journey for us.
I bet. Oh, I got it. Do you know what I love too about the book? I'm just opening it. It says, to Alia, Claire, and Libby, you brought us together in a time of division. I read that. I get a lot of emotional now as I've got older. And I guess because of the experience of what we've been through. And I read to Alia, Claire, and Libby, you brought us together in a time of division. And that's a true statement, is it not?
Well, it really is. I think a lot of people in the book, they mention the importance of VFF from the early days of Freedom TV. How we often huddled over the computer screen on a Sunday night listening to those podcasts and Peter Kennedy and, you know, all the legal updates and, you know, sort of hanging on every word and all the documents they produced. I mean, just, and of course, all the groups, you know, in the early days after we'd moved to Westport, we would drive up the coast a little way and meet all these VFF people, and we all had our phones turned off, and we were all worried about whether we'd get sprung by people. I mean, it was a really crazy time, but we met all these amazing people. And what was your experience, yes, Adriana?
They very much did link us all together with their programs of giving legal advice, helping us find ways to express ourselves, to find each other. So I think they played a very crucial role, particularly in the first year or two, to get us all together. It was very important and very valued.
I don't know how I would have survived, but I wouldn't have survived very well without Voices for Freedom.
That's right.
Because I felt so alone with my family. And my immediate family all on board, not a problem. But you didn't know who to trust. You'd often say things to people that you thought were good friends. This comes out in your book. Or colleagues who you thought were rational and open for debate. And you'd be frozen out. And so you learnt to keep your thoughts to yourself to the point where, again, this is in your book, you think you're going insane. And then through Voices for Freedom, you met people who had the same questions that you had. And you found an entirely new set of friends and family. And it was literally like a swap. And then the strange thing to me was they were all across the paddock in terms of politics. I'd be sitting there with Green voters and Labour voters and ACT voters and National Party voters, you name it, Maori separatists. But we all shared the same concern. So you felt not alone. Christopher, you have a master's in literature.
In philosophy, actually.
Philosophy.
Yeah.
Because you write very well, too. It's a well-written book, well-edited.
Thank you.
Tell me what got the two of you thinking it would be an important thing to record 30 stories of people's experience.
So it started when I heard a podcast by an Englishman with an English woman who had done something very similar. She was on her third book of a series called Memories of Lockdown. And I listened to that interview, and something about it was so compelling. The idea just popped into my head. We can do this. I can do this. And even though I'd never done anything quite like it, I just had that somehow that compulsion to take on this project of collecting people's stories from the people that I knew. Because by then, it's just over a year ago, I was already part of a very vibrant, beautiful community of friends and acquaintances who had all these stories to tell. But there was also the sense that time was already passing.
Yes.
There was a sense of normality coming back into life. Some people were getting back into jobs. And I had that fear that if we didn't do it now, if we didn't get on with it, people would lose interest. And then all those stories about how other people treated us would get forgotten. And somehow it would all get brushed under the carpet. And so there was a sense in which I could do this for my community, but I could also do it for a wider community by producing something which, as you mentioned earlier, is a testimony to what people went through. You know, really the crazy things that people went through in those years.
Look, it reminded me of everything I experienced. Because what I love about your book is, I'm not going to say it's normal people, but it's everyday people experiencing everyday things that occurred with the lockdowns and the mandates and MIQ. I love the MIQ stories because that wasn't something I experienced. Mm-hmm. And one lady in your book sailed through MIQ, loved it because she needed a rest, right? And then another lady went and it was hell on earth because it was a poorly run hotel. It sounded like the Gestapo were in charge. And it was terrible to her. So I had never experienced MIQ. So I loved that, feeling that, because I used to look at that and think, that must be the worst thing in the world. And this poor lady that had such a bad time of it, and they're sticking the PCR test up her nose, sticking it so far up, her nose would bleed. And she said, oh, look, you just can't do that. Well, if we don't do that, you'll be staying another 2 weeks. And the 2 weeks that she had to stay there cost her $4,500. You forget.
Yeah.
Adriana, you're in the book.
Yes.
How did you get involved with the book and what was your role?
Well, because I know Chris well and in a lovely community and him bringing up this issue of writing the story, I really took it on board because having been mandated out of my job in the November, and it just kind of rolled. It just rolled from there. I had to suddenly sell my home, buy another home in Westport or along the coast anyway, in an area I'd never ever visited before. So I bought my house sight unseen because Auckland was still in lockdown at that point and we couldn't leave. So all of those experiences, it just kept rolling, and I kept having to adjust and adjust. And I'd not really sat and faced the issue at all. So when Chris suggested I write the story, I really took that and ran with it. And for me, it was massive to be able to stop for a moment and look at what it actually meant to me, what it did, how I felt, and not just keep running. It meant that I had to stop, take stock, and integrate the upsets, the betrayals, the highs as well into my whole self. So that's really what started it for me, is Chris prompting and then facing the whole saga.
The feelings come through in the book. It's not the, then this happened and then that happened and then they did this. You've captured with the book, Chris, how people felt when that happened. And we all had our own experience, but every one of us felt what you've captured in this book. All the different feelings and emotions, all the highs, all the lows, all the anger, all the sadness, families torn to bits. People ripped away from jobs they loved for years and years and years, done their job faithfully, just shot. You captured all of that. It's wonderful. I want to cover the toad because you quote the bard.
Yep.
Sweet are the uses of adversity, which, like the toad, ugly and venomous, wears yet a precious jewel in his head. Tell us why you chose that.
I think the word adversity captured so much of what people went through. But I didn't want to write or compile a book of stories which were just doom and gloom. I wanted to tease out of people what jewels they found in their experiences. Like, you know, Adriana, as difficult and as horrendous as that story was, ended up in Westport as one of her dear, dear friends. That's just one little example. So I encourage everyone to find the light, the jewel, you know, the precious thing in this experience, as hard and as painful as it was. So I wanted it to be, you know, also a gift to other people, a gift to all the contributors, but also to the wider community, so that people could also pass the book on and, like you've done, Rodney, read the book and appreciate, you know, what people went through, but also somehow heal the divisions that were created. I mean, I've had lots of stories of people who were sympathetic to the book, but they passed it on to their family members who maybe wouldn't have been quite so sympathetic. And, you know, hearing that they didn't find it confrontational, but that they felt confident to pass the book on, that other people might read it and appreciate the fact that, you know, people were put through a pretty hard time. I think everyone was put through a hard time, whether they were agreeable to the whole narrative or not. And they were difficult years.
Adriana, I read your first, you're the first story in the chapter, and I didn't stupidly connect you with the story. And I read it out a little bit on air with Paul Brennan, because I was telling them how much I was appreciating the book. I never thought I'd have the pleasure of your company.
Thank you.
And I want to read, if I may, bits of the book and go through it, because I think that's the best way for listeners to appreciate what this book does. I think you'd worked at the school for 15 years, science teacher.
No, I'd actually worked at that school for 5 years. I'd been a science teacher for 15, though.
Okay.
I retrained later in life.
Okay. And you know a little bit in your work of virology and viruses? And
yes, I worked with mammalian viruses extensively before I became a teacher.
Ah, so this comes out in the front of the book that you knew quite a bit and you were struggling in the classroom because you didn't buy what you're being told.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't tell what is the obvious truth to the students because that would get you into trouble.
Exactly.
Well, imagine if you're still there now and trying to explain that a boy is a boy. Your story says this. In October 2021, it was announced that vaccination for teachers would become mandatory by mid-November, or they'd face the risk of having their careers terminated. A hopeful, optimistic part of me tried to find a way through this madness, and I held on to the belief that there would have to be a way around it. After all, don't all problems have solutions if we're creative enough? The resounding answer was no. This problem was insurmountable. And at my school termination, due to lack of vaccine compliance, was given without negotiation. There were possibilities for me not to have to lose my job, but the Board of Trustees and principal were not willing to consider any other alternatives beside termination. On Friday, the 11th of November, 2021, I was informed by the principal and Board of Trustees that my role was terminated and I was not allowed back on site under any circumstances from Tuesday, the 15th of November. If I did venture back onto the school grounds, police would be called to remove me. I couldn't believe it. I was still in the process of marking exam scripts and wanted to return them along with verbal feedback to senior students myself. I needed to remove my personal effects and resources from my classroom, return the laptop and keys. More than those mundane tasks was the desire to say goodbye to the many students and staff I'd shared much with during my teaching time. But that was not possible either. I read that and the emotion that brought up in me as a reminder of what friends and colleagues and people in Voices for Freedom went through just hit me all over again like a hammer. Tell me about it. The sense of feeling, the betrayal.
Yes, it was. When the principal informed me that my role was terminated, I went into cold shock. I've always lived my life by the maxim, and that's very much what I try to impart to students, is when a problem comes up, you need to be creative. You can find solutions. There's always a solution. So to be simply terminated without any possibility of negotiating something workable for both sides, it was very hard to swallow. So, yes, it was... There were possibilities. There could have been another solution found, but that particular school wasn't open to that at all at that time. So the shock of that was massive. But then what flows into its place is the need to do something practical. Well, I've got to face this now. So that's when I jumped to it and got into Trade Me and looked for houses and thought, well, I've got to move. So
also too. Further in the next paragraph, it wasn't that you were just summarily fired from a position that you'd poured your heart and soul into and was a calling.
Mm.
You weren't just terminated without much ado. You're treated as a pariah, you say.
Yes, that's right.
So it's like you're a sex offender or something, right? You're leaving in disgrace.
Yes, exactly.
And again, it comes through this book, which I'd forgotten about, that you were a nasty person who didn't care for Nana and the kids.
Mm-hmm.
and that's how you were treated.
And that was a hard one to deal with because there was no way I could address it. I simply had to accept that label. There was nothing for me to do to say, well, no, I'm not a pariah, actually.
The more you try and argue it, the nuttier they figure you are.
Yes.
You go on and you say, those ominous orange skies in Auckland in early 2020 did indeed portend disturbing times ahead. Not only for me, but for all of us in a multitude of ways, regardless of opinions and beliefs held about COVID-19. Sadly, I don't know where this will all lead. I'm not sure it's all over yet, despite recent government announcements. All I can say is don't take anything or anyone for granted. Love your family and friends. Live in the moment as much as possible.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful feature of this book, Chris, because everyone's positive, and while I'm concentrating on reminding of people of the hard times, the stories themselves are uplifting of people overcoming adversity and seeing the silver lining in a very dark cloud.
I think that was definitely part of what I wanted to achieve. So I'm delighted you say that, Rodney.
Well, like I said, I just love the book. By the way, we'll come back to this at the end too, but how does someone get by this book?
So at the moment, there are like 350 copies sitting in my front room. That's the only place you can get it. So basically, there's an email address. It's the title of the book without the word the at the beginning. So True Face of Kindness, one word, @hotmail.com.
Right.
It also has a Facebook page. If you type in the True Face of Kindness into Facebook, there is a page dedicated to the book.
Oh, wonderful. Do you mind if I read bits out of it?
Go ahead.
I mean, I don't. If you've got things to say, please do. But funny enough, the book speaks for. I can't believe actually you've got 350 copies and like you've done this book because it's a very professional book. I mean, it looks like a book should look. It looks like it could be Oxford University Press soft cover. So well done. This, by the way, is Moira. My eldest daughter was in tears with me many times, wanting me to have the vax. As I was in the age group of the dying, supposedly, it didn't matter what I said. I could not calm her fears or change her mind. We had a lot of discussions. They all ended in tears. That's a story for a lot of people too, isn't it?
Well, that was an incredible story that she told. I found it hard to work on that story because it was so powerful. Every time I, you know, read it, proofread it, I mean, that was many times as well, it would always choke me up.
Can I add to that?
There were
multiple of those stories, so some of them which I transcribed and worked with as well, were deeply heartrending when you sat with the person through the rawness of the emotion as they were telling their story and then having to put that into a compilation which was sort of somewhat smoother. It was really personally challenging. One of those is the story by the tattoo artist. You'll discover it later in the book.
Yes.
The absolute heaviness that left on that man's soul. There's one story in the book that didn't have a completely positive ending. He's, as far as I'm aware, he's still struggling with aspects of what he went through. So the whole, although the Chris was extremely good at trying to get people back to finding the positives in it, and most of us did, the heartrending parts just can't be overlooked either. there is positive, but the negativity that led to that positiveness was also not to be underestimated.
Indeed. I'll come back to that, Chris, but I just carry on with Maura because she says the church, the Anglican church, was pushing the vax. And she says, I spoke against this policy. I said we had an obligation to fight evil, to stand against government intrusion in the church. The policy of the church lacked courage, was morally wrong, and worst of all, lacked biblical support. There were others who felt the same as I, but most of them kept it themselves, to themselves. I believe the doors of the church needed to be kept open to all. However, in the end, they had more fear of being killed by healthy people than they had belief in the protection of God. So, tough when you lose your church, or the church loses you. And that happened up and down New Zealand. Again, just so wrong. Chris, you have experience in helping people with mental health?
I wouldn't say that I have direct experience. Once upon a time, I did work for Lifeline up in Auckland. I was on the phones on occasion. I did some training on the telephone counselling line, but that hasn't been my work.
Okay. I guess what I'm saying is you more than most would appreciate the huge risk to people's mental state that these policies caused.
Yes, and it shocks me that even now, I mean, I've had some people say, I haven't the stomach to read stories like this because it's still so painful and so raw. And I've had other people say, I can't write my story because if my family know that I've written my story, it will, you know, it'll bring about it'll deepen the divisions that they're trying to heal. So, I mean, when I started this project, I don't think I had any idea really of the depth of trauma that the whole country was suffering from. I mean, they were supposed to be concerned about the physical health, you know, the public health of New Zealand and promoting some way of dealing with this threat. But even more than the physical health impacts of the measures, you know, I think the mental health impact of the measures, you know, the COVID response measures, has just not been in any way quantified at all. And I think this book, in a small way, is a kind of microcosm of that.
Oh, very much. And it's got to be read by, it's got to be more than 350 copies, because not only is it cathartic for the people who wrote their story, I found it extremely cathartic to read it, because I realized I was traumatized, deeply traumatized. And it was only in reading this book now that I recognize it, because I was... You try and be the tough guy, right? Being locked down or being abused, we can handle that. But it was the gaslighting that got me, this idea that I was insane and wrong and down a rabbit hole and a deplorable, a river of filth. That's what, when I knew, I wasn't any of these things.
No.
But it went on and on and on and on and on. And it's like having everyone say that night's day, and it drives you insane. And this book, reading this book, Chris, was cathartic to me. Because everyone has got the feelings are the same. and you brought the feelings out, and I could recognize their stories and their experiences were different to mine, but the feelings are the same. And I realized that reading this book, that this was our war. This was our great depression. We went through this and come out the other side different and damaged in ways that we're only now beginning to appreciate. This is Peter. I should say I'm sort of just picking up on the negative bits. And Peter ends by saying, forgive but never forget. They're trying to paper over the past. Nothing to see here. No harm done. No guinea pigs were hurt in the making of this dystopian medical tyranny. Yeah, right. But this, it just resonates. The book is wonderful. The scariest part, our be kind Prime Minister becoming a gleeful tyrant. Telling us in one awful interview that, yes, we will have a two-tier society. The safe, virtuous, inoculated. And the contagious granny killing unvaxxed. The next scariest, the majority of doctors went along with the medical, social, economic tyranny, failing to promote sunshine, vitamin D and C, and many other natural immunity boosters. So true.
Yeah.
It's powerful, isn't it?
It's powerful reading it. And like, this is Peter. And then he says, if we can't trust the doctors or the government, well, we're just going to have to trust the network of information that is still getting out over the web and our native wit and that of other free minds, not cowed by big government and big pharma propaganda. And that is what we did and do and will do. So help us God. We lost about $7,000 in wages. We had to rent out the house and live in the cabin. But we remained free of the spike protein and alive and well. You obviously like Shakespeare, Chris. You got one chapter here called Much Ado About Nothing.
Yes, that's that was another take on the whole thing.
Do you like Shakespeare?
Well, in that story, yes, indeed. And that story, well, there was a story about one woman who went to a Shakespeare play. I think that might have been.
Yes, there is, in the pop-up. The pop-up.
Yes, the pop-up Globe in Auckland. And, gosh, I should remember.
No, don't worry, but you isn't Shakespeare, it's like Mozart or Beethoven, it's just at another level of anyone has ever before achieved or since achieved. It's just, how did he write that stuff? It's
no idea.
And the stories themselves are powerful, the plot's powerful, but the English words, you can just take a line of Shakespeare and literally have it in your head forever, and it's so beautiful.
Mm.
You know, but soft what light through yonder window breaks, it is the east and Juliet is the sun. Could you write that? And he wrote pages and pages and pages of it with a quill. And it's the most beautiful words ever put together. And it's at almost the dawn of English.
Yeah.
I love this one. I love it because there's snippets. This is Rob McElroy, he's got his surname. Nearby at Pihar, there is talk of militias and roadblocks. Signs are put up on Pihar Beach telling people to stay away in less than polite words. And then he describes how they were, not him, of course, but people were disabling cars of outsiders that had come to Piha, because they basically wanted to stop anyone from coming to Piha to protect themselves. They were that driven by fear. I mean, do these people now think, I was a bit silly?
I have to say, I do wonder how people think of how they behaved in those times.
And Rob writes this, because he's down at the protest. I'm doing this because it's so wonderful to share these stories. And I think it's a powerful way of saying why this book is important, because it captures, we all should have kept a diary, but we never did, and now it's all jumbled. But you read this and it's your diary, but this is the protest. As the stalemate unfolds, a young man, maybe in his early to mid-teens with Down syndrome, steps forward between the two lines and performs a haka. I'm going to struggle to get through this. What a strong, powerful, emotive haka it is too, with spirit, with mana. You can say the rung, you can see the young recruits. This is the police recruits. I say recruits as they look to be very fresh, as though this is a training exercise and a test of their mettle, start to waver. Some are looking away. Some are obviously embarrassed, ashamed even, to be facing us. The standoff continues with our young lad standing defiant between both lines, the energy coursing through his body. He's shaking. He's agitated. The lad's mother, sensing potential danger and how upset her boy is, steps forward to hold him, to calm him, and to pull him back to our lines. The recruits are clearly shaken. They are wanting to leave this awkward situation. They are faltering. Just then, one of the sergeants, who must also be sensing the mood, steps through their lines and violently pushes the lad's mother to the ground. That's it in words, isn't it?
And now it's in black and white.
And you're captured by the humanity of the young police officers, and you're captured by this young boy. You can visualize it, Down syndrome, haka. And then we know from the COVID years that they're amongst us. Little tin pot tyrants come rushing through and push a mother to the ground in front of people. I read the one of the St. John volunteer who took all his, actually lady, took students through for a decade to get their top certificates, was dismissed, and was not allowed to attend the ceremony where they were awarded. And she got fired from being a postie, out on her own, on a bike, because she wasn't vaxxed. And that's another thing that you get through this book that you forget, was that there were people who reveled in this, Chris. The tyrants, I mean. And our Prime Minister was a bloody tyrant.
I mean, that person you just mentioned is the most absolutely generous,
gentle soul.
Gentle, lovely, giving soul. She is absolutely amazing. And it, you know, when you know her and then you read that story, the sheer unfairness and injustice of it struck me particularly.
And also the sheer loss of her contribution to the
yes.
It's such a waste.
The here's a conclusion of a couple who described their experience. Several years have passed since the lockdown. We note we're never meeting other members of the group, that there is a lasting special bond stemming from this deeply shared experience. How true is that?
Mm-hmm.
We need our own RSAs.
That's such a good point. We do.
Where we can, then there's the one about the MOQ. Oh my goodness. Those 2 weeks were the most horrible time in my life. We were treated like highly infected and infectious prisoners, surrounded by armed guards. The MIQ one, I enjoyed, well, not enjoyed, that's the wrong word if you know what I mean, but the MIQ one was an experience that I didn't have. And I found when I met people who had been in MIQ, they almost didn't want to talk about it. So I appreciated that very much. It's a very, very powerful and important book. And if you went through the COVID years, you need it in your bookshelf because it's our collective diary, Chris.
And I hope it prompts more people to write their stories. It certainly prompts people to start to tell their stories when they see the book and they're talking to people who've got it and, you know, it does seem to be a way to start conversations which haven't found a way to start so far. My wife was in Germany recently. She visited a couple there, and they had ended up on opposite sides of the fence. And so talking about the whole COVID pandemic years was just the no-go zone for them. She showed them the book. She gifted them a copy. And just that act of giving them a copy and telling them what it was about prompted a conversation between them, which they had never ever had. So it softened something between them, and they were able to then talk. It was just an amazing little story.
I hadn't appreciated that, but that's true. The local CEO of the council here knows me, and I was complaining to him about the stupid policy. And he said, just go and get the jab. But to him, it was nothing. Just pop in supermarket car park, get the jab. And to him, it was like that. Just go and get the jab. And I think if he read this book, he would totally change his mind, because he'd see that for some people, it wasn't just about taking the jab. It's not even an argument about whether it was safe and effective, but it's how he ended up treating people. He had no concept, because it's just like, go and get the jab. What's the big deal? It's like, it's, you don't have to pay anything, and it'll only take 2 minutes and you're done.
Yes, there's a story in the book of a woman who tells that in the supermarket she was talking to someone who said the same to her, well, just go and get a jab. And when she said, well, no, there's much more to it than that, he basically wished her dead.
Yes. And then she saw him some months later and said, I'm still alive. What does the book cost, Chris, if we email you?
So the book is $45.
It's a steal. Postage.
Yes, postage. I've got the cardboard twist packs to send them out. So the postage will be about $8.50, I think.
Well, I suggest people get at least 2 books, because it's one you want to give away and you actually want to keep it and be reminded, because, again, this isn't a book about the facts and figures and what the latest research is showing or what the latest argument is. It's about what people experienced in their lives and how they felt and how they overcame incredible adversity, extraordinary adversity, and came out better and stronger for it. And so it's a heartwarming story, and it's actually our shared experience, Chris.
Thank you, Rodney. It's lovely and gratifying. You know, when you spend a long time working on something and you really don't know quite what you've done, I mean...
Because you're so... you think this is the effect that you'll hope to have, and then when someone reads it cold and they get the precise effect that you were hoping to achieve, it must be gratifying.
It definitely is, yeah.
I got to tell you, it's a funny story. I went to the States with my daughter and I took the book with me for 2 weeks and I thought I'd read it on the plane. I'll read it over there at night. I'll read it on the plane coming home. And I never did because, you know, you get tired on a plane. And then I picked it up and I started reading and I couldn't put it down. And I kept saying to my wife, darling, hear this. You got to hear this. Because it was a feeling that she and I had and discussed. And it brought it back. But it enabled us to process it, Chris.
Mm.
We could process it.
Yeah.
Mm. I can't thank you enough. Tell us the email again.
TrueFaceOfKindness, that's one word, lowercase, @hotmail.com. Email me and I'll send back all the details.
You're fabulous. Adriana, thank you so much. Thank you so much for helping with the book.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you so much for being in the book. As you know, your story moved me. Is your story in the book, Chris? I think it is because I remember the German bit.
There is a story by Chris.
Yeah.
The name on it, but it's by Chris.
Yeah, no, because it starts to match up because I was just reading it and like it were just first names, but. Listeners, if you went through the COVID years and wondered what the hell was going on and had some strange feelings, this is a book for you. It's probably a book for some family members, and it's probably a book for friends new and old, and probably ex-friends. So dig deep. It's that sort of book. Chris and Adriana, thank you for joining us. You're on Real Talk with Rodney Hyde on Rally Check Radio. You can email us at inbox@rallycheck.radio. You can give us a text at 2057. We'll put the email up on the replay on the webpage so you can check it out. We'll put a link to the Facebook so you can check the Facebook out. I didn't know there was a Facebook. I'll be going to it because there'll be some great comments, I'm sure. It's a book. It's like you went through World War II and you'd want to have the official history sitting on your shelf because you lived it.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.